Welcome on the 37th podcast van Drupalese, van Florida en België, de geboorteplaats van Drupal.
I'm Andrew Riley, and this is the Drupal Easy podcast number 37. An interesting fact about this podcast is this is our first, two-continent podcast. We have Mike joining us from the middle of, I think it's somewhere kind of famous, Mike.
It is. Well, it's famous for, you know, people who live here, I suppose. I'm in Antwerp, Belgium for the summer.
But isn't Belgium the birthplace of Drupal?
The birthplace, the motherland of Drupal. I'm soaking in all I can.
And we also have Ryan Price, who is a little more domestic this time, who's actually in the U.S. How's it going, Ryan?
Oh, I'm doing well. I got my cup of coffee. I got a, you know, fuzzy ball of fur, which is also known as my cat. And it's early morning because we have to go, you know, bicontinental here. But it should be a good, very, very level-headed show this week.
I appreciate you guys getting up before 11 a.m. this morning.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're going to have to talk about what constitutes early morning, because I'm up at 5 every morning regardless.
That's because there's two of us that have children on this podcast and one of us who doesn't.
That is true. My sleep pattern definitely changed when my son was born.
Yeah, that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so each podcast, we choose 5 topics in the Drupal world that we think you should know about and that hopefully keep you in tune with the whole Drupal heartbeat, if you will. Is that cheesy enough?
Ba-bum, ba-bum, ba-bum.
Ooh, now with sound effects. So for our first story, it's should organic groups be renamed to just group? And Mike, you tagged this one.
Yeah, I remember hearing something about this a month or two ago. I don't know if it was on Twitter or another blog post, but I just kind of let it, you know, I quickly forgot about it. But on Gizra.com, I don't know who this person is, but they posted a poll. Should organic groups be renamed to group? I guess the thinking is that do we really need the word organic in, you know, the main Drupal group module? So before I say too much else, what do you guys think, yes or no?
Well, I think that it's a horrible idea. I am completely against the single word simplistic repurposing of an existing word, such as the word Word. I know I just said Word 15 times, but the program Word by Microsoft is a word editing program, but calling it Word is just horribly confusing. I'm totally against these simplistic names. It kind of leads to confusion. So what does that really mean? I think organic groups is a good name for it, and it's not confusing. It's the only organic groups I've ever heard of out there.
There's some decent comments down there below the post. If you go to the show notes and you click the link at drupaleasy.com/podcast, some people have objections. One person says user groups, which I actually thought of when I first heard about this renaming. Why not have user groups? Because that's really what they are. You know, we're not collecting nodes into group. We're not collecting taxonomy terms into groups. We're collecting users. So I think user groups makes a lot more sense.
I think you are both completely incorrect. I'm sorry. I have never, that's a long time. I think the word organic is misleading for this. Organic, you know, there is part of the organic groups module that fits the organic word, but you can, and you know, it's done very often, you can implement organic groups without having any part of the organic features. You know, when I think organic groups, I think, you know, you put organic groups on your site and then users kind of self-organize, kind of like groups.drupal.org. Mm-hmm. But there are many use cases for this module where you're not doing that, where you don't want your users to self-organize, where you're using organic groups for different reasons, for, you know, for you to create specific groups where you put people in. I don't like, you know, I've never been a big fan of organic groups. The module I love, the name, you know. Do I like group? I actually do. I understand what you're saying about user groups, Ryan. There's actually one comment that caught my eye a little while ago, and I actually think it should be renamed to groups, plural, kind of like views, panels. That's all the examples I can think of right now. But well, I just don't like the word organic in there.
One example that I have, you know, to come back to my, like, it should be called user groups is let's say it was flag. Flag, you can flag comments, you can flag nodes, you can flag users. Node queue, you can only stick nodes in there. So it makes really a lot of sense to put the word node in node queue or node reference or user reference because it describes the object and sort of the action or the modifier to it. So this is putting users into groups. I think that the programmers and the object-oriented thinkers out there could really get behind it.
Okay, I have something new to say. Andrew, you are completely wrong. I think what? Ryan just convinced me.
Well, no, actually, I was going to say, based on that argument, I would go for user groups. I don't like just plain groups, but user groups makes a little more sense.
All right, problem solved.
Next story.
Call it a podcast. User groups it is.
Done. Voted by Drupal Easy. Okay. So our next story is the Drupal Camp Organizer Survey. And actually, this is a Drupal Easy post talking about the survey. I think, Mike, you wrote that one?
Yeah. It's a Drupal Easy post just because I didn't really have any other decent place to put it. So I've been working with the Drupal Association for a couple months now, ever since Florida Drupal Camp, trying to figure out ways that the association can help user groups to organize Drupal camps. Right now, the only thing the association can really do is offer advice, and which they do. And if you want to organize a Drupal camp and you're not sure how to go about it, there are people in the association who can help, who can talk you through what you need to do and give you advice and stuff like that. But the association wants to kind of move to the next level and actually offer something. What that's going to be, it's not really known yet. We're just trying to figure all of that out. So one of the things I volunteered to do was create a survey to start collecting information about all these camps that go on. Because every time we would talk to someone about organizing a camp, we would always have these random examples of something that somebody heard, but we never had any hard data saying, well, most camps are organized this way. Most camps have a budget of such and such dollars. So, what we've done, and I'm working with a few of the people in the association, we designed a survey and sent it out to as many people as we could. There's a post on the @Drupal, the Twitter feed. I put a post in the Drupal event organization group. And we ended up having 31 responses. And I actually just, before we started this call, I actually just posted the summary results. We're still going to collect responses, but I'm hoping that by putting some summary results out there, more people will see it, more organizers will see it, and we'll get more completed surveys. But it's kind of interesting to find, to see, how all of these camps have been organized. So before I start talking more, have either of you guys seen this article about the summary? Because if you
have,
I've
not seen the summary, no.
Okay. Andrew, did you take a look at it yet?
I'm reading through it currently.
All right, stop reading. Close it. Okay. I'm going to test you guys on some of these.
Switch tabs.
All right, so I don't know how far down did you get? Did you get down? Well, it doesn't matter. Just
the first paragraph.
All right, just pretend like you didn't read any of it.
Okay.
All right, so we had 31 completed surveys. So basically that represents 31 Drupal camps. So what was the total? Or for you guys, I'm going to ask you to guess. What do you think the total number of attendees for 31 Drupal camps was?
I would say they averaged about 200 per. So you're talking roughly, what is that, 6,000 roughly?
About 6,000?
Yeah.
Ryan, what do you think?
$1.
$1. You win. We're going by Price is Right rules. No, the average attendance was actually only about 135 attendees. There were camps as small as 45 people, as large as 375 people.
Wow.
That was Drupal Camp Spain.
I was going to say, was that LA? Because I didn't think LA got that big, but yeah. Spain, it's good.
So the total number of attendees for, you know, 31 camps was a little over 4,000 people. And to put that in perspective, the most recent DrupalCon DC, DrupalCon San Francisco, that was what, a little over 3,000, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, so, I mean, right there, you know, you can see that.
More people are attending camps in a year than are attending the big conference. And it's only going to grow. It's probably going to go a lot bigger.
But see, I that's definitely a good thing, especially with a lot of the people talking about how the cons have been changing. And, you know, it's either too developer-centric, et cetera. But by having distributed camps, you can actually address a lot of those issues, I think.
Yeah. And actually, a couple of the questions we do, you know, address that. Before we get there, though, so let's talk about, you know, finances. All right. So let's talk about the budget real quick. What do you guys think was the average budget for a Drupal camp?
$2,000.
I'm going to go low. I'm going to go for the low dollar, $800.
Unbelievable. I thought this was amazing. It was over $5,400.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was the average?
That was the average. And it broke out. I actually broke it out because I was kind of surprised by that. 11 camps had a budget of less than $2,500. 8 camps had a budget between $2,500 and $7,500. And 5 camps had a budget of over $10,000.
Mm. Wow. Although,
so Mike, are we bringing up the average there? Are we in the middle camp?
Yes. For our Florida Drupal camp, our budget was right about $5,800, I believe.
Wow.
So yeah. we are smack dab in the middle. We're in the middle for budget, and we're a little above for attendance, but not much.
Although I think next year we're going to have to up our budget a little bit just so we can get a larger facility with decent net access.
So, or make a friend at a college. That might have to be our solution.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, here's a stat I was really interested in figuring out. The average cost per participant to put on a camp. And this is based on budget. So this is not a minimum cost. This is just what was spent. You know, by these 31 camps was about $34 a person.
That's not bad.
Yeah, that's not too bad. And it could very easily be lower. I mean, there are a lot of camps that, you know, raised a lot of money. So to feed everybody for free, to give out swag. So there's a lot of stuff that was paid for that didn't necessarily have to be.
Mm-hmm. I think with just the number of free books we had, we could have not had t-shirts and people would have been very happy.
Yeah, exactly.
Although listening to these numbers, it almost sounds like it'd be daunting if I was, let's just say, in the middle of somewhere that didn't have a Drupal camp. They don't have to have these crazy numbers to do a Drupal camp, do they?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, that's the thing. That was one of the first pieces of advice I got from, I think I was talking to Kieran at the Drupal Association about, you know, what's it going to take to put on a camp? And he basically told me, and I think I conveyed this to, you know, all of you guys at one of our meetups, is the camp is only going to be as big as the user group can support. You know, if there's not, you know, if there's nobody interested in giving money for sponsors, then we're not going to have lunch. So the camp's going to go on no matter what. Mm-hmm. But if we can only have Drupal camp in a room that holds 20 people, then that's how big it's going to be.
Okay, so you're saying it's totally up to the people putting on the Drupal camp to scale it to their means.
Yeah, and the key word there is people. I mean, it's, you know, having just one person do it, you know, it's got to just be an awful, awful job. and if you're just one person, then you should probably just put on a small camp. But if you have 10 people in a room and everybody's really motivated to put on a camp, you can put on a pretty cool camp.
All right. Well, since we're spending so much time talking about this, I want to throw in a bonus story here.
Sure.
It's about a Drupal camp that's not a Drupal camp. It's actually called Open Camp, and it's happening in Dallas. I guess it says here Addison, Texas, but I'm assuming that's outside of Dallas. Their URL is openca.mp, and it's happening, I think, in the fall. End of August, actually. Excuse me. End of August, and they had a WordCamp, a Joomla camp, and a Drupal camp all join forces. And now they can have, if they want someone to have like an SEO session or a Photoshop session or a social media session, all three of those collected groups benefit, and if they wanted to have a larger speaker or something. So maybe another way, if you have a small group, is form an alliance with another user group and have like a joint event like Open Camp.
Absolutely. And yeah, Addison is just north of Dallas. That is correct.
Who shot JR?
Dun, dun, dun. Hey, so one other fact I wanted to throw in about this survey, and there's all kinds of numbers. If you go look in the link on the show notes, you can see. I mean, there's all kinds of facts. But the average number of participants per volunteer. So this is kind of an interesting thing. You know, say you have five people who are really motivated. Realistically, how large of a camp can you have? You know, we had some camps that had more than 20 volunteers. Almost half the camps had less than 10. The average number of participants per volunteer for all of the camps was about 16. So, you know, if you just want to back the envelope count calculation as far as what would be a manageable size camp for the eight of us, you know, 8 times 16 is, oh boy.
It's about 100.
Yeah, let's see. I got a calculator right here. 8 times 16 = 128, right? So I thought that was interesting. And there were actually some camps, some large camps that only had one or two, let me put it this way, where the participant to volunteer ratio was well over 30, which made the average a little bit higher than it probably needs to be. But, you know, on the same hand, that makes for some volunteers who are spending probably the vast majority of their time in the weeks leading up to the camp doing nothing but camp stuff. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, it's chock full of information, and check it out.
Mm-hmm. One quick thing I just want to add, that Drupal camps are very important for the Drupal community. A lot of people can't afford to go to the DrupalCon in their area, be if they're a remote part of the world, or just, you know, they can't afford it. The Drupal camps make it affordable for local people. You know, like in Florida, you know, people may have driven 2 hours, but that's a lot cheaper than flying to California or to wherever in Europe it happens to be this year. So if you're thinking about putting one on, I highly recommend it.
And, you know, the association can help. So, well, they can help with advice right now, and hopefully soon they'll be able to help with more.
Okay. Well, the next story is actually one of mine. Lullabot just did a job posting, and, you know, job postings are job postings. But one of the interesting thing is they listed a minimum certified to rock score as part of the job requirement. Let's see. It says score 5. Or higher on Certified to Rock, but they do add a caveat, which is good, or be able to display 2+ years in-depth experience with high-performance Drupal sites. Now, this is probably the first time that I know of that Certified to Rock's been used in a job posting. Have you guys ever seen that before?
Yeah, certainly not.
Yeah, absolutely not. This is the first one I've seen.
Which I think it's a pretty cool measure. I'm just glad they had that caveat, because like I'm not listed and certified to rock yet, despite our entire 15-minute podcast about it a couple weeks ago. Andrew M. Riley with Spaces, okay.
Well, and then I saw recently, because after I saw this story, I went back over to see if I got listed yet, and I certainly have not. But it made me think about, you know, how you could have those ratings, and, you know, I wonder if they couldn't like bring other people into the algorithm to speed up this indexing process, because they now say they're only going to like start indexing once every few months, because I guess it takes a lot of compute power or something.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, definitely it's starting to take on a little bit of a life of its own. And my problem with it still is, and something we alluded to the last time we talked about this, is there's not enough information as to what goes into that score. And I'm not looking for the algorithm where you take this factor and multiply it by this and divide by this. That, you know, that's doesn't matter all that much. But I would just like to know what's being taken into account. Is your number of CVS commits? Probably. How about the number of issues that you submit? How about the number of forum posts that you have? How about all those little check boxes on your user account saying, I've attended DrupalCon, San Francisco, I've attended this, I've attended that, I help people with this. Is any of that stuff being taken into account? How about, does it change over time? Let's say I have, a Drupal or certified to Rock score of 10 right now, which I don't mind, it's actually 4. If I don't do anything for 3 months, is it kind of like radioactivity where it's slowly going away? Is my score going to get lower the longer I don't do anything? So there's all these kinds of questions about what's being put into that number that I think that if these scores are going to start being used in job postings and other places, I think we just need a basic, some basic knowledge about what's going into that score.
Well, I have a little bit of a theory here too. Because they did say who the top like 5 people were. So, right. Obviously Trees, but then also Earl Miles, Merlin of Chaos, and Karen Stevenson are 2 of the very, very most highly ranked users. Earl's an 11 and Karen is a 10. And then I think about, well, what module does that person maintain and how popular is that module? And then you think about somebody like CHX, who is only, what was he, a 5 or a 6?
Yeah, it was, let me look right now. It was low. I think it was a 5 because I remember him just being
and
one
so,
higher than me.
So I'm looking at his user profile right now, and he's contributed to a lot of modules. But if I had to guess from the number of commits only, he's only the maintainer of a few. So I wonder if sort of like the popularity of your module might count in that somehow, because I'm sure that Karen and Earl both have a lot of contributions to core, but I would say that CHX is a lot more sort of famous for his contributions to core than modules. You know what I mean? So I wonder if right now there isn't a skew on that.
Now, one note while we're talking about Certified to Rock, we had an updated comment on podcast 36, I believe it was, and I forget who we're crediting all the work to, but Ben Jevons and let's see who else.
And Greg, I know. Greg Knadison?
Yeah, Greg is the one we're giving all the credit to, but I think he posted that Carl Weideman and the Ben Jevons did a large chunk of the work, so I just wanted to give them credit for that.
Credit or a place to direct our barbs?
I don't know.
I think it's a cool tool. I would just like to know more about it. I mean, mm-hmm.
Although yeah. One interesting thing, I just looked up Coltrane on, he was the person that the comment stated did most of the work. His rating was a 4 on Certified to Rock. So maybe they're not as corrupt as you guys are pinning them to be.
Oh, no, I'm not calling corruption.
No, holy cow, rewind.
let me rephrase that. I was saying that in jest.
Like
this is like last year's designers versus developers argument. It was like who's picking sides, and I'm like, I'm not picking any sides. I'm just trying to tell everybody what the news is.
Ryan, did you just say you don't like designers?
Yes.
I'm
not going to design for Drupal Camp or anything.
Now, this is a classic Drupal project where it's probably really cool under the hood, but there's absolutely no documentation. That's what Certified to Rock is. I mean, it's great. It's awesome.
Sounds like a lot of modules I've downloaded.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I just had a weird image of Addy actually ripping through Mike's wall like the Kool-Aid guy and saying, if you don't like the docs, you can write some.
I know. Please give me the information. I will write the docs if I have the information.
Wow.
Let me put it out there. Send me the info. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, all right, we better move on before Andrew gets us in more trouble.
I like stirring the pot.
Holy cow.
Well, actually, it's a pretty good segue into the next article. And Mike, you posted this one. It's about defining a Drupal expert, because I see a lot of people out there that call themselves Drupal experts. And there are a lot of people that definitely are. And, I put them up to like demigod status in Drupal. But then there are also people who say they're Drupal experts. And I've even experienced this with trying to hire some people. They come in and say they're a Drupal expert, yet they've never even used CCK or Views. They've just like installed Drupal and they think they're some kind of an expert. So Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about this story and maybe how we'll clear that issue up?
Yeah, well, I don't think we're going to clear anything up. not by a long shot. But this ties directly into Certified to Drupal or Certified to Rock. I'm mixing names up now. But The article by Chris, I have no idea. It might be Chris Sloan. I'm not. It's from Level 10. It's a level10design.com blog post. Obviously, links in the show notes. But it's a whole blog post about what exactly is a Drupal expert and how does one define that term and how do you defend that you're a Drupal expert. And it's actually what I got out of the article is the fact that the phrase Drupal expert almost doesn't mean anything anymore because there's so many different aspects of Drupal where you can be an expert in the term Drupal expert probably needs another adjective or two to describe a single person.
To split it up.
Yeah, to split it up. Like, and here's an example that probably came right out of the blog post or out of my head. I don't remember where I'm remembering it from. But let's say that there is someone who is really, really good at tweaking Drupal's performance. You know, the guys at Pressflow who came out with Pressflow, you know, did all this. They know how to get the most out of Drupal, how to, you know, utilize Memcache and other pluggable cache systems, and they're experts at that. But on the other hand, they can't theme their way out of a paper bag. So they can't theme, but they're truly experts at Drupal performance. Does that make them a Drupal expert? I mean, could they go in somewhere and say, I'm a Drupal expert, and then have a client say, okay, here, theme my site, and they have to go, whoa. So I'm not that kind of Drupal expert.
So you're proposing that they would be Drupal performance experts.
Absolutely. There needs to be some adjectives in there. I think we're doing a disservice to everybody by using that term Drupal expert. I think that when you talk about your skills with Drupal, you need to be as clear as possible. And this is, you know, not just even a Drupal thing. This is like a life thing. Just be true with your words. Mm-hmm. You know, well,
if for a little exercise, I'm just thinking you could have performance expert. You could have module expert of, you know, like creating modules. You could have a theming expert, and you could have just a general configuration expert. Can you guys think of any other adjectives that we need to add in there?
Well, actually, I can, and they're actually being created by the community right now. I'm going to segue us into the next topic because there's a group of people on groups.drupal.org that's working on this very thing right now. And Mike and I at DrupalCon San Francisco, we called, so first we had our session, which we gathered together a lot of people who offer services as professional training. And we had a nice discussion. And then later that day we said, oh, well, let's have a BOF later this afternoon. Let's continue this discussion. Some people came to that. One of those people was Heather James, who is now working for Acquia. And Heather is fairly involved. She's actually has a really, really low user number if you go look up her Drupal.org profile. And then she called another BOF later, and a bunch more people came, and it was actually so many people that we had to like break the BOF up into several little smaller meetups. And we all got to talking, and eventually that moved on to let's have a bunch of weekly chats on IRC. And now I think they're doing them on GoToMeeting because it's a little bit more visual and you can hear everybody. So this is a long way of saying there is a page, a group on groups.drupal.org called Curriculum and Training. And if you're interested in this topic, you should go and join the Curriculum and Training group and attend some of those weekly chats. And one of the things that they've put out is actually a survey. And the link to the survey will be in our show notes. And they're trying to figure out who uses Drupal and for what. So they have right now a couple of sort of temporary names for these. System architect, developer, themer or front-end developer, site builder, content editor or content manager, design and user experience, project manager or project planner, and then there's an other category right now. And they have the survey, and it's sort of meant to find out what people do, what's popular, what's in demand right now, where the holes in the Drupal skills gap is out there. And then the idea that we're going to pick one of these roles and sort of come up with like a model set of skills. So like, let's say that it was the themer. If you're a themer, what things do you need to know? Your skills and abilities. Do you need to be able to identify color palettes? Do you need to be able to write HTML? Do you need to be able to do like a semantic information design of the page? You know, and so on and so on and so on. And what are skills are very specific to a themer? And then also what skills are general that everybody who does Drupal professionally needs to know? And then at that point, we will stop. And then everybody else can go and make their own curriculum and their own, you know, their own set of learning tools. But the idea is to have the community, quote unquote, agree on this set of roles and this set of skills and abilities that are both common to everyone that does Drupal professionally and that are specific to a job title that you might have. And I could keep going forever. Sorry.
Well, I have kind of, this is a combination of both the last post that we just talked about, and this is totally ridiculous, funny, and completely geeky. I apologize to our listeners, but we should go with a role-playing game D&D style stat system. You know, someone could be +5 performance, or, you know, level 5 performance, level 3 module writing, level 1 theming, and we could all just carry around stats cards and we could have battles in the middle of DrupalCon.
All right, well, as long as I get to roll my D8 for podcasting, then I'm okay.
I'm sorry, I think I've stumbled into the wrong podcast. What happened?
Thanks for listening to the Drupal MMO podcast.
Holy cow. All right, yeah, I say you get right on those cards.
Yeah.
Andrew, you just let me know what I need to do.
I might. It would actually be pretty funny. This is just a side note because, you know, some of us are in Orlando currently. The new Harry Potter experience they have at Universal Studio, they actually sell the chocolate frogs with the wizarding cards in them, which I just thought was awesome. So we should have Drupal cards like that.
Inside of chocolate something.
Yeah, well, chocolate's just always good.
Yeah, now I'm with you.
Since chocolate,
you said chocolate
kittens.
I'm in.
Chocolate kittens.
Mike, you can bring us the chocolate from Belgium.
I can look out this window I'm looking at and see two different chocolate shops. That's how thick with chocolate this place is.
Well, I always imagine Belgium, you just like open your window, drip out, you know, put a spoon out the window and you'd have a spoonful of chocolate.
Chocolate and waffle. And yesterday, my daughter, we were out walking around the city a little bit and, you know, they have like these little waffle stands, kind of like you have like ice cream stands.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually found a chocolate covered waffle
that
my daughter inhaled in about 5 minutes. It was fantastic. So, anyway,
okay,
Ryan, you're getting on a plane tomorrow morning, right?
Absolutely, I am.
Now, where are you going?
Where are you going?
I'm just going up in the air. In fact, it's actually the Boston Design, what do they call it? Drupal Design Camp Boston 2010, which is happening this weekend. If you're listening to this, you might be there. It might have already happened. But D4D is, I guess, the short name for it. And they have a very pretty website. And it's really interesting. They actually named the levels of sponsorship after the color palette of their website, if you could believe that.
It's very design-centric.
It's happening at an absolutely beautiful building, which is the MIT Stata Center. The building actually looks like it sort of threw up all over itself. And it doesn't really have any like 90-degree angles just about anywhere. And then somebody also told me that I think it's Tim Berners-Lee has an office in that building. And Richard Stallman has an office in that building. And like all these very, you know, smart, trend-setting people. And they're like, oh yeah, and sometimes, you know, when we're having our Drupal meetups, we could just walk by and say hello to those people. And then I go, you Boston people with all of your egg-headedness.
You mean Baston.
That's right. So there are a lot of really cool people going to be there and some nice sessions. And it's all about design and theming and user experience and jQuery and fun stuff like that.
Awesome. Well, we can't wait to have a podcast as soon as you get back and see what you learned.
Yeah,
and
info.
3:00 on Saturday, it looks like they have actually accepted my session, which
sweet.
I'm honored. And yeah, I tried to submit this session multiple times to multiple different Drupal events and Drupal camps. And
is this Drupal on TV?
Drupal on your TV.
Awesome.
That's interesting. I hope they record it.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but we did have plans at one point to get Jeannie and Susan and some of the organizers to come on and talk about the camp, but we've sort of took a summer break, if you guys hadn't noticed. I think, what has it been, like 6 weeks since we put out our last show?
I don't think it's been that long.
It's been a little bit.
And now would be a perfect time to thank our sponsor. That would be webenabled.com. If you are a developer, if you are developing a new site and you have an existing site, if you're working on something completely brand new, you want a place to host your project and you want a place to collaborate with others, you want to get your Subversion hosting up, it's pretty quick and easy with WebEnabled. You can actually try it out for free and you get going within a matter of minutes, literally. And there's no server setup to do. There's no Apache configurations. Actually, the really interesting thing that happened to me this week is we were working on something, and WebEnabled, they tend to have a very tight security there. So they don't just send you your password and email. They'll never do that. They'll only show it to you on the screen or let you reset it. And that's just an example of the kind of security they have there. But one of the things they do is they have a particular PHP setting turned off, which is to allow you to go and grab something from a remote URL. And we're setting up a site with embedded media field, and specifically it was trying to go and grab the thumbnails from, I believe it was Blip TV. And when it goes and tries to grab the thumbnail, we get this nice red error message that says, oh, you can't do that. And I sent an email to Jeff, who is our support guy, and he responded within a few hours and he said, oh, you actually have full control over your php.ini settings. There's a local version right there in the folder for each one of your projects. So if you need a special setting for PHP, you can stick it right in there. So that worked really great and fixed our problem, and they had great support. I thought that was really neat. And the fact that you can configure your own PHP settings is something that you're not going to get in a lot of web hosts, period. It's particularly not the shared hosts.
Yeah, you might get like a few settings that you can change, but you know, complete control is pretty rare. And that's kind of, you know, the one thing I was going to mention about WebEnabled that I've been taking advantage of, and they recently redid their main dashboard page when you log into your account, because they've been creating these little videos, you know, 1 or 2 minute long videos to help you do things that aren't readily apparent. And they're just great. They're right on the main page of the dashboard now. It's a list of all the videos that might be helpful at that point. You click it, you watch it for a minute, you know exactly what you have to do. So it's, you know, web-enabled can be a little bit daunting at first because of all the power. Sounds familiar. but those videos being right there, and now that they're moved to be actually on the dashboard, is fantastic. So check them out at webenabled.com.
Okay, so each podcast we choose basically a pick of the podcast that we think you should know about. It could be an additional story, it could be a module, a theme, or even a book. So each one of the hosts choose something different for you. Now remember, you don't have to actually go and like write down really quickly what we're talking about. You can always check out the show notes at drupaleasy.com/podcast. So Mike, you're up first this week. What's your pick?
Yes, my first. I actually have two picks.
Oh,
my first pick. Well, no, but my first pick is only because I love the name. It's solar panels. How awesome is that name for that module?
Now, I'm assuming this ties in between Apache Solar and panels.
Exactly.
Okay.
But there's no releases. I don't even think the module has a maintainer. I'm not really sure how that module even exists without a maintainer. but I saw it come across like the new module RSS feed. And I said, that's my favorite module. And then I went to check it out and there's nothing to check out. But I had to mention it because it's solar panels.
Okay, so it's not necessarily the module, it's the name is your pick.
Yeah, that's fair. Yes. I choose the name.
Okay, and what's your second one?
So my other pick is a module that, you know, I've been using, you know, pretty consistently for the past year, I would say. And it's one of those modules that you just kind of turn on, and I'm not even sure if it has a settings page. It might. But it's the transliteration module. And it might do a bunch of things, but the one thing I know that it does, and the reason why I use it, is that it sanitizes file names for files that are uploaded with file field, or actually all files that are uploaded. So if you have a site where, you know, any random person can upload a file, if they have some crazy characters in the file name, that can possibly mess things up on your site for when someone tries to go download that file, especially when you're talking about international characters. What transliteration does is basically just standardizes the file name using ASCII characters. So that's all it does. I was reminded by it. A friend of ours, I saw he tweeted about it. It may have been this morning or last night or something. I'm like, that should be my pick of the week because that's a really cool module that it's got such low overhead. You just kind of install it and enable it, but it can save you headaches down the road if your users can upload files or anybody who you don't trust can upload files.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely a good one. It's one that I install on all the sites I create just because the users are going to upload the most horribly named files you've ever seen, and this kind of fixes it. But it also has an added bonus that most people don't know about. In PathAuto, you can turn on transliteration, and it will go through, and the paths, if they're putting in weird characters that are outside of the scope of what PathAuto handles, this module will tame them for PathAuto.
Oh, awesome. I did not know that.
Yeah, so it's a good one to have, you know, just on all sites, I definitely think.
Yeah, particularly if you have people that are pasting things in from Microsoft Word. I almost wish that transliteration could have, like, an input format or something and convert, like, bad quotes to good quotes and fun stuff like that. But another one with that, with the file names, is, like, one time we were doing a data import, and this was before TableWizard and Migrate existed, so there was basically just doing like a direct SQL import. And then I went to the files table and none of the images were showing up. So I'm looking in the files table and there are like apostrophes in the file name. And there are, you know, parentheses in the file name. And I had to do some serious shell script foo in order to rename all those files and then rewrite the files table database just so that it would actually be like recognized by Drupal. I didn't understand what half of the files were because there were all just all kinds of nasty characters in there.
So is that, can you access that module? Does it have like an API?
Well, I would like to try that if it ever comes up again. What I ended up doing was just literally essentially rewriting a lot of the file names with a script. And then even after the script, I still had to go back and clean up a few manually. But once I did it, it was done. So that was the nice part about it. I only had to do it once. But I'd like to see transliteration maybe have like a Drush API or something that you can call, like pass it this string and then it'll pass you back a clean one.
Right, right. Cool.
Yep. And Ryan, your pick of the week might be a little flashy.
Oh, yes, yes indeed.
Man.
This is a module that I have used in the past before. And it's normally when you have MP3 files or video files and now, dun-dun-dun-dun, pictures that you would like to display in a pretty sort of, I don't want to say user-friendly because I don't actually believe Flash to be user-friendly, but this was an early problem with podcasting, you know, 5 years ago when a lot of people started doing it, was there would be this RSS feed thing, and then there would be a link to the audio file. But you'd have to like wait for the whole file to download and then start playing it. So people started embedding video players and audio players and slideshow viewers right there on their site. And now there are a million ways to do this with the, you know, there's all these like document uploaders, like SlideShare is a good example. Right now, SwiftTools doesn't really have a specific SlideShare, you know, document viewer, but You think that if you submitted a patch, maybe it would have something along those lines. So what SwiftTools does, it provides a couple of things. It provides you some PHP functions for displaying little Flash movies wherever you want on your site. And a lot of times these are the widgets that playback media. And that's what most people use it for, I think, and that's what I like.
We just lost you, Ryan.
Like to use the in square bracket Swift equals file name, and it will just sort of automatically insert that into your body of your Node, and you could also think maybe you could write like a little plugin for one of the WYSIWYG editors that would just insert a little, you know, Swift button if you wanted to do something like that. Also, if you've got a Flash movie that you want to embed into something and you're not interested in using something like Flash Node, this might be a good module to check out. And then they have actual support for multiple different audio, video, and photo gallery widgets. So one pixel.
Lost you again.
Out Word is a very highly configurable, scriptable. Stopping. What's that? I'm so excited.
We lost you like for a couple seconds there.
Yeah, and you're fading out.
Andrew was trying to be very gentle about it, and you were just like a verbal steamroller. It was great.
My favorite new one is actually called Simple Viewer. It's a really fun little photo gallery viewer. And now I'm done.
Just in case, Ryan, give us the one sentence version of what you just said. What is your favorite one?
Oh, my favorite one, my favorite new one is called Viewer, and my favorite video player is called Flow Player. And if you have a media file that you want to play back inside the web page, check out Swift Tools.
Andrew, you're up.
Okay, so my module or my pick of the week is a module. It's called Input Formats. Now, two quick things. One, I've never used this module, but it solves a huge problem that I've been having lately. And two, the name totally confuses me going on with my rant earlier, because the module is called Input Formats. So what this module actually does is it changes your input formats over to objects that can be used by the system. Now, for most end users, that doesn't make any sense. But the big thing is it can then be used by the features module. So you can roll up your input formats, your input filters into a feature and export that using the features module. So that's a huge thing, because that's something that just the way the input filters have originally been created didn't work with that. So this module bridges that. So then if you're writing an installer profile that heavily uses features, you can have it drop in your input filters quite easily. So this is definitely for the more technical user that's going to be probably working on a lot more than just one or two sites. You know, they're going to be working on dozens of sites. But if you fall into that category, I highly recommend that you check it out.
All right. So I have a couple questions about this module, because I've never even heard of it until you mentioned it. So first, it doesn't replace your current input format system. All it really does is it acts as a translator between the settings that are there now and the features module for.
Well, actually, it has a full API, so any other module can take advantage of it. But as it used to be, the input filters were kind of a black box. It's like the input filters, you could only modify it on that screen, and pretty much it was hard to touch it any other way than other than doing direct database access, which is generally bad. This just opens it up.
Well, so, but this doesn't provide another UI.
No, not another UI, just the API. Yeah.
So, would there be at the current time? It seems like from what you said that this is used with features, and there's not really another use case for it unless another module comes along and taps into its API.
Pretty much. It's kind of limited, and it's definitely developer-centric right now, but I really hope this is something that maybe not necessarily this exact code, but something along these lines makes it into Drupal 8 because it's one area of Drupal that's kind of closed off, kind of like Cache was before Drupal 6.
So I guess I have two more questions now. Mm-hmm. So couldn't the C-Tools exportables kind of do the same job that this is doing? Where, you know, with C-Tools, the exportables basically can take anything and make it exportable. Any database structure, I should say. I think that's the correct way of saying it, and make it exportable. That's kind of what this is doing, right?
Well, it actually hooks into C-Tools exportables.
Oh, okay. So, all right. Let me ask one more question. I guess the last question is the strong arm module, which is related to features, can that export input formats? Can that handle export's the wrong word. Can that handle input formats?
It can do, if I remember right, and I've been working quite a bit with StrongArm lately. Yeah. It can grab some of it, but I remember that it wasn't grabbing everything. It wasn't as perfect as it should be.
So this is kind of this is kind of the solution to the input format exportable problem then.
Yes, and awesome. The other thing is I see StrongArm kind of as a Band-Aid for right now, whereas all parts of Drupal, I believe, should truly handle exportables themselves.
Right, right. Cool. Yeah, sounds like a good one. Okay. So we lost Ryan a few minutes ago. He dropped and has not come back.
Yeah.
So we're not sure if his house was hit by an asteroid or if maybe the cat has attacked or worse.
Yeah.
knocked over a glass of Coke on Ryan's computer. We have no idea what happened there.
Oh, hopefully it's not the glass of Coke on the computer.
He needs a new laptop anyway, so I'm sure he has a backup somewhere.
Well, okay, so we have a side of the week, and actually it kind of ties into you, Mike.
Yeah, this was like a side of the week from God. it actually is for Leffe.com, which is a Belgian brewery. It's Leffe.com. They relaunched on Drupal. I believe Dries posted about it. And it's actually just an excellent, excellent beer. The other night, I actually had Leffe Ruby, which is a very sweet version of their beer, at a restaurant in the city here that was on tap, which was very special. But it's a cool site. It uses there's a bunch of Flash in there. Because it's a brewery, when you first go to the site, you have to enter your date of birth. And it kind of goes by country. It's obviously internationalized. There's many languages to choose from. It's a very pretty site that talks about the history of the brewery and where you can buy it and all of their social networking initiatives that they're doing. If you're a fan of Leffe, you should definitely check it out.
And it looks like they use some different multilingual type things, although I keep hopping between the languages.
Yeah.
Well, though that makes it kind of interesting, more authentic, I suppose.
One thing I noticed is I don't think they're actually using URL aliases. I don't know if you've how much you've clicked around on this, Andrew, but I know the few pages that I clicked around, they were all node/whatever, which I thought was kind of funny.
That I had that, but then I manually put the EN in front of it, and then I started getting normal SEO-friendly URLs.
Oh, really? Maybe they're still in beta. Let's go with that.
Okay.
This is a soft rollout of their site.
Mm-hmm. Although they have a diagram of pairing foods with the beer.
Yes.
One, I think every food just goes with beer. But they're listing turnips going with their Leffe Blonde.
Turnips are big in Belgium.
Really?
There's three food types. There's chocolate, waffles, and turnips.
I'll take the first two.
Yeah. Turnips, I don't even think I've had a turnip here in Belgium. I don't know. They do have strange vegetables, though. They have this thing called witloaf, which I'm not exactly sure what it is. It's like a thick, leafy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing they have is white asparagus. And I've seen that in the States as well, but here it's everywhere. Like when you order asparagus, assume it's going to be white and not green. And I don't know why that is. But it's quite yummy. It's tasty.
Hmm.
And I'm sure it goes great with a Leffe beverage.
So there you have it. Go to Belgium for the beer and for the vegetables.
Perfect.
So remember that you can always stalk us through a multitude of channels. On Twitter, you can follow us at Drupal Easy, or individually, it's Liberator, Ultimike, or Andrew M. Riley. And you can also just get our combined feed at friendfeed.com/DrupalEasy. Now, we have all these links available at DrupalEasy.com/podcast. When you get it, if you happen to be going to Design for Drupal, make sure that you look Ryan up or look for him in the crowd. He'll probably be around talking, and say hi to him.
Hey.
We were just talking how you love to talk and say hi to people at conferences.
Yes.
So, yeah, we're just wrapping up the podcast. And tell us exactly what happened, because Andrew and I had a couple of theories about why you were dropped off. So we want to see if one of our theories was correct.
Well, first the snowman showed up.
What? Didn't have snowman.
And then Santa Claus was here and he said, "Don't worry, Ryan, Christmas is only 8 months away, 6 months away." I don't even know what he said.
Was there a weird acid trip or something?
Yeah. Hunter S. Thompson and I actually share a birthday, so I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, it's bad country.
What the hell just happened? How long were you gone? Because for us, it was only like 2 minutes.
No. I've actually been to the Sahara Desert and back at this point.
Okay, fantastic. Well, look for Ryan at Design for Drupal and have a coherent conversation with him.
Yes, and I think I'll be staying in a place called Jamaica Plain, if that makes any sense to people who live in Boston.
Interesting. Jamaica and Boston. Okay. Well, we'll see you next time, and we're going to leave you with some parting music that is actually from a Drupal shop called New Helix. They're in the Philippines, and they're going to be singing the Drupal song for you.
See ya!
If you got a website, you need a system, no matter what your content, Drupal.